We? The voice in the dark whispered. He stopped. Horrified, he looked at the scars along his left arm. I'm a freak. We have to speak with Fenswick about this. No, I don't want anyone else to know. Rook grunted. He pulled away and went to Blackwood, who was beginning to awaken. We couldn't argue now, so I bit my tongue and joined them. Rook helped the sorcerer sit up. Groaning, Blackwood rubbed the back of his head. What on earth happened?
I tried throwing force at the men, but lost control, and hit you instead. I'm so sorry.
My apology was sincere, which lent credibility to my lie.
They got away.
I thought I saw...
Blackwood paused as he studied Rook. He shook his head.
Probably hit my head too hard.
To change the topic, I said, Thank God you sensed something. Who could they have been?
London's full of dangerous men, Blackwood muttered. This is why you must never leave the ward again, without a companion.
We helped him to his feet and let him lean on us both as we shuffled toward home. Once we were inside, Agrippa and the housekeeper fussed over Blackwood. Rook seized the opportunity to slip away. Soon as I could, I ran up the stairs to the servants' corridor and knocked on his door.
Rook, please let me in.
After my third round of knocking, he said,
I don't trust myself, Nettie. You must stay away.
His voice sounded strained, as though he was lifting something, or perhaps holding something at bay. I pressed my palms against the wood. I wanted to claw my way through.
I'd feel so much better if I could see you.
I want to let you in, he groaned. I heard him move farther away from the door. But I can't.
The ball's the day after tomorrow. All you need to do is hold on till then. All right?
Yes.
His voice was so, so faint. Only a few more days. Rook could hold on. He would. He had to.
Chapter 21. Lily helped me into a crimson gown, an outfit I'd not yet worn. I was determined to enjoy this night. Rook was secure in his room, excused from work on account of the afternoon's attack. That was a comfort. My nerves were raw.
First time at the theatre, Lily sighed. You'll need something ever so special.
She showed me a paper bundle.
For your hair, miss, from the garden.
They were several red roses, the perfect colour of my dress. We dethorned the flowers and inserted them in my hair where they might stay. When I turned for her, Lily clapped.
Beautiful!
I went downstairs, following the sound of the boys' voices and laughter. When I appeared, everyone fell silent. Dee grinned. Even Lamb and Wolf gave me an appreciative nod. But I felt Magnus's eyes on me from the moment I came down.
Shall we? He murmured, offering his arm.
The carriages dropped us at the theatre, directly into a cluster of fashionable people. We entered the red velvet foyer. High mirrors in gilded frames reflected the crowd, giving the impression of a churning sea alive with faces and conversation. Burnished candelabra illuminated murals of pink and white ladies seated atop fluffy clouds, playing lyres and surrounded by winged cherubs. We looked about until we found Blackwood and Eliza. The instant she spotted me, she kissed me on both cheeks and took my hands.
I'm so glad you've come. I wanted to show you this particular cut of gown. Do you like it?
She did a full turn for my benefit, charming in an emerald green dress with puffed sleeves. She fluttered her black lace fan.
It's lovely.
I told Madame Voltiana to make its style into an especial cut for your commendation, since it's so fashionable. Do you plan on drinking any champagne tonight? George won't even let me try it, she said, tapping her brother's arm with her fan. He shook his head and smiled. His sister was the only person on earth who could remove his stoic facade.
I've never tasted it before, actually. There! You see, George, if Henrietta gets champagne tonight, then so do I, and don't tell me I can't, she said.
Magnus approached us. Eliza smiled and held out her gloved hand in a rather theatrical gesture.
Hello, Mr. Magnus. It's been so long since we last met.
She batted her eyelashes. My dear, Magnus said, kissing her fingers, you've grown even lovelier. I didn't think it was possible. He bowed deeply as she giggled and fluttered her fan. God, they deserved each other. Blackwood cleared his throat and drew Magnus away. With the young men gone, Eliza turned to me.
I've had a delicious thought. Once you're commended, we can design a howl seal. No one's designed a new sorcerer's seal in ages, so it'll be marvellous. Are you partial to unicorns?
Not really, I said with a smile.
Oh, well, just a small one then.
At some point, we were obliged to take our seats in Blackwood's box. We'd a good view of the stage. Men and women squinted through small pairs of opera glasses to better watch the play and to better watch one another. I wondered, uncomfortably, if any eyes turned toward our box. I craned my neck to look up at the domed ceiling, at the crystal chandelier, at the red velvet drapes and the magnificent painted screen in front of the stage. I could never have imagined such a place, and I was so overwhelmed I scarcely read my program. As the lights dimmed, small, moth-like creatures fluttered down before us. I almost swatted them with Eliza's fan.
Don't, she whispered. They're usher fairies.
Indeed, upon closer inspection, I noticed the small human creatures attached to those wings. The one in front of me shook its silver blonde hair and giggled, a thin, almost inaudible sound. The fairies flew to the stage, and the play began. I enjoyed every moment. The four lovers were hilarious, though I found Helena stupid with all her crying and screaming. Titania and Oberon, the fairy king and queen, were so beautiful it practically hurt. Titania's skin glowed, even when she stood far away from the lights. At some point in the play, an unfortunate man named Bottom was given the head of a donkey.
The fairies actually turned the actor's head into an animal's. The audience shrieked as the donkey brayed at us,
a bit hard to understand with his mulish lips. Puck, a boy with green skin and leaves for hair, appeared and disappeared in the laps of several audience members. He even materialized in our box, kissing Eliza's hand and swiping a rose from me. Magnus swung to get it back, but Puck vanished.
It's all right, I said.
Magnus had had too much to drink, and frankly, so had I. What a delicious experience champagne was.
What was I on? My third glass?
Magnus put his lips to my ear.
He should have kissed your hand. You're the most beautiful girl in London tonight, he whispered.
My whole body felt warm, somehow heavier. Puck, at the end of the play, appeared before us on the stage.
If we shadows have offended, think but this, and all is mended.
Magnus
levelled his stave at the actor.
"What are you doing?"
I snapped. "Steal a rose from you, will he? I'll give him roses." He aimed at one of the candles, and the leaves on top of Puck's head caught fire. Everyone screamed. The little fairy squealed and beat at his hair to put them out. Once he'd done so, he pointed to our box.
"Sorcerers, you behave yourselves, you drunken reprobates!"
The theatre erupted in laughter and applause. Pointing his stave toward the ceiling, Magnus yelled,
"For Her Majesty!"
The boys and I all joined him, except Blackwood, naturally. The audience cheered. I had never felt so alive or wonderful. With the play ended, Blackwood ushered me aside, grabbing my arm when I stumbled.
"You're drunk, Miss Howell."
"I am perfectly all right." Really, he shouldn't look at me with such horror. I only tripped because the carpet was uneven.
"I'm taking you home. If anyone saw, your reputation would be damaged."
"Don't need a reputation." I stared at his shoes. They were lovely shoes.
"I want to get smashed too,"
Eliza whispered.
"Eliza, be quiet. Put your head down, Miss Howell, and we'll..." "Keep your hair on, George. I'll take her home,"
Magnus said, settling my wrap around me.
"I can hold my liquor. You've got your sister to see back."
Blackwood nodded.
"Fine. Be careful, the both of you."
He escorted Eliza away. She waved to me and flashed a look at Magnus.
"Thank you, Father,"
Magnus grumbled. Snickering, we stole off, tripping once on my skirt. We climbed out of the carriage, singing funny songs about fish. The butler looked less than pleased as we stumbled inside.
"Shall I send Lily up, Miss Howell?"
"I'll ring her when I'm ready, thank you." Magnus and I clomped up the stairs. I held out my hand to shake. "Good night. Sleep well." He kissed my hand, never taking his eyes from mine.
"Good night, Howell."
That warm, liquid feeling returned. I walked to my room, trying to clear my head. I'd just gotten to my door when I heard a noise and turned. Magnus was behind me.
"What is it?"
My voice sounded hoarse.
"I forgot something," he said.
His eyes had the strangest light.
"What?"
He put his hands to my waist. I gasped, but he held me. He brought his lips to the corner of my mouth and kissed me.
"Wait,"
I said. He pulled back.
"That wasn't so bad, was it? I'll leave if you wish."
That was exactly what he needed to do. There was Rook upstairs, the commendation, the war.
"Stay."
For a moment, I couldn't believe what I'd said.
"Take it back, now."
But his kiss. He slid his arms around me, brought his lips to the other corner of my mouth. I groaned as I turned to catch him, but he cupped my face in his hand, holding me in place. Gently, he pressed his lips to mine, only for an instant. I leaned forward, burning for more.
"Please,"
I said, the world swimming before me. This was so wrong, so disastrously wrong. But at the moment, all I could do was feel how warm he was against me, how soft his mouth was.
"Oh, my darling,"
he whispered, and kissed me again, harder this time. I ran my fingers through his hair. He kissed my neck, breathed against the hollow of my throat, and nipped my bare shoulder. Every molecule inside me exploded with light and heat. Magnus kissed my eyelids and then returned to my mouth.
"To hell with all this,"
he whispered.
The hall spun. I heard my bedroom door close, and he pressed me against his body so that we lined up perfectly with each other.
"I've wanted this for so long,"
he whispered into my ear, sending small signals of fire running down my spine.
"You've wanted it, haven't you?"
"Yes," I said. Now I kissed him, wrapping my arms around his neck. I couldn't seem to stop. It was like when I set myself on fire, the spark giving birth to a full blaze. I trailed kisses along his jaw. He groaned and pulled me closer.
"You're an adventurous creature, aren't you?"
His voice was rough, his breathing harsh. He ran his hands down my back. "I don't know," I whispered as he kissed my neck. It felt as if I were running down a steep hill, my heart pounding with exhilaration. I made him look at me, traced my fingertips over his face and through his hair. Touching him was overwhelming. Did all people find kissing this intoxicating?
"You are adventurous," he murmured.
I felt the flicker of his tongue as our kiss deepened. He touched my hair, cried out, and brought his hand away with blood welling on the tip of a finger.
"How the devil?"
"The roses. We missed a thorn," I said, half afraid he would stop. He laughed as he pulled the flowers out of my hair and kissed me again. My feet left the ground. I was lying down now, the canopy above me whirling. Magnus pulled my skirt up inch by inch, revealing my leg.
"No!"
I yelled. I pushed him away, rolled off the bed and fell to my hands and knees. No amount of alcohol would make me forget myself that much. I staggered to my feet and hung on to the bedpost. Magnus sat up, his hair rumpled.
"What are you doing?"
I asked. What was I doing? How had we got here so quickly?
"I thought, well, weren't we going to..."
"No, for God's sake!"
I could barely speak the words.
"But what else are we supposed to do?"
He sounded confused.
"That is something you save for marriage."
"But, my darling," he said, as if I were slow, "you know I can't marry you."
"Excuse me?"
The drunken effects vanished. I'd never been more aware of anything.
"You know I'm engaged to be married."
"You are what?"
Images flashed through my mind of spearing Magnus with a bolt of lightning.
"I told you, didn't I?"
Now he seemed hesitant.
"Miss Doris Winslow? I'm engaged to her. Wait, didn't I tell you?"
"No!"
The floor spun beneath me. I wanted to fall onto my bed and wake to find this hadn't happened.
"Oh, God, no wonder you were enthusiastic. I'm sorry."
He shook his head and ran a hand through his hair.
"It slipped my mind."
"You thought you'd..."
I choked on the word.
"With me! And then leave me!"
"No, Henrietta, I'm only marrying her because my family's destitute. I don't know how to earn money, so I have to have an heiress. But she's very dull, you know. Not like you."
He came to me, that roguish smile back on his face.
"You're the most exciting girl I ever met."
"But you wouldn't marry me."
My voice sounded distant. Had I even wanted to marry him? His presence was so intoxicating, and I sometimes couldn't keep myself from thinking about him. But was that love? I didn't think he could treat me this way if he loved me.
"I can't have two wives, can I? Look, we keep it a secret. Once we're commended, you have your house, and I'll have mine. It'll be easy to meet, for my reputation would be destroyed." "But you're going to be a sorcerer. You're not like other girls. Even if they found out, no one would..."
"You don't understand a damned thing about the world, do you?"
Mr. and Mrs. Magnus would be accepted by society.
I would be an outcast because loose women must always know their place.
I want you more than any other girl I've ever met, Magnus said, reaching for my waist.
Want, not love.
If I could, I'd marry you tomorrow. As is, let's make the best of this bad situation.
I slapped the smile off his face, hard as I could. Grabbing porridge from my sheath, I held it to his chest. He put his hands in the air.
Don't do anything foolish, he muttered.
Get out, or I'll scream. Magnus opened the door and left. I sat on my bed for 10 minutes, stupefied, then rang for Lily. She didn't ask why I'd waited so long to call for her, and I didn't tell. I huddled in the darkness until I heard the boys come home, the shouts and jokes echoing through the halls. I thought about the day I'd dueled with Magnus in the library, when he'd praised my eyes. I'd imagined there was something special in that attention. But I was wrong. He wanted me, nothing more. I was the fool. A bloody fool, I thought. Magnus had tossed one of my roses onto the bed. I picked it up and tore all the petals out in a fistful, squeezing them tightly. I thought about Rook, the two of us, sitting out on the moor, back in Yorkshire. Everything had been clear. Everyone in their right place. Who had I become? What was I becoming? I cried while I listened to the boys go up the stairs to bed. The harder I cried, the more I hated it. I set fire to the petals to calm myself, watching them crisp and blacken in my hand. It worked. The flush of heat on my skin evaporated the tears. The fire scorched my sadness. Only an ember of anger remained.
Chapter 22.
Are you well, Henrietta? Agrippa asked at breakfast. I stared bleary-eyed into my tea.
Just tired, sir. Across the table, Magnus ate in silence. When Dee tried to make a joke, Magnus shot him a look so black he shut up at once.
The whole room was quiet except for Lamb tapping his water glass with a fork. Blackwood read a letter over and over, lost in thought. We were quite a merry gathering.
We'll practice creating the column of fire this morning. When you've finished your breakfast...
I'm finished now.
I pushed the tea and untouched toast away.
You haven't eaten a thing.
I'm not hungry, sir.
I dare say too much champagne,
Blackwood said, putting his letter away at last. He looked from me to Magnus. I could see that he suspected something. Damn him.
Perhaps Miss Howell might benefit from private instruction, he said.
The blood rushed to my cheeks. I'm fine working as usual. I pushed my chair back and left the room without another word. I imagined a candle flame that grew into a pillar of light. My hands felt warm. But the column of fire did not appear.
Henrietta, you're not trying, Agrippa said.
My head hurts.
That wasn't a lie. Well, it can't. Tomorrow you'll either be commended or dismissed. No second chances. Everything must be perfect, he said.
Blackwood stood by a wall while Magnus looked everywhere but at me.
I've done well so far, haven't I? Massaging my temples did nothing.
The Queen is young and unsure in her reign. Her non-magical advisers don't like the idea of a woman sorcerer. If you fail in any way, they'll persuade the Queen not to commend you.
Sparks shone upon my dress, but died. Agrippa puffed out his cheeks in exasperation.
Why on earth are you so tired this morning? You went to the theatre last night. It wasn't a walk to Northumberland.
He circled around me. I don't feel well. Memories of kissing Magnus returned, tinged with shame.
How you feel doesn't matter, Agrippa said.
What do you mean? I dropped my hands from my head.
These men want to see if you are a sorcerer. They've no time for anything else.
The chamber filled with a great wind that knocked Agrippa down. He struggled back to his feet, his hand raised as a signal to stop. As long as I do exactly what everyone wants, I said, I'll be worth something.
That's not what I meant.
He attempted to get up again, but this time I forced him back. My breath quickened. I'm tired of catering to everyone's demands, and I'm tired of pleasing and pleasing. My voice rose into a scream, and the wind rose with me. Agrippa cried out. Blackwood ran to help him up and shouted for me to stop. Magnus gripped me by the arms.
You're going to hurt the master.
His grey eyes burned into mine. He was right. I didn't want to hurt Agrippa. The wind died down and Magnus sighed in relief, squeezing my arm.
Thank you.
I set fire to the exact spot where Magnus held me. Screaming, he recoiled and stared in horror at his blistered hands. My thoughts swung broken and wild. I wanted to burn. I dropped porridge and turned from them, head in my hands. Rage pulsed through me, and as it did, the flames leaped higher.
Stop it! Blackwood cried. You're losing control!
The blue flames rippled on my skin and clothes, whirling in a column as they rose to the ceiling.
I can't stop!
I shouted as the fire grew. I couldn't silence the pounding in my head, the fury. I pressed my palms to my forehead and shrieked. Great scarlet waves of flame turned the obsidian walls into reflections of hellish red. I couldn't calm down. Magnus had made me vulnerable. Of course he could never marry me. Couldn't I see that? I wasn't worthy of that great honor. Blackwood and Magnus crouched beside Agrippa and warded themselves, but the wards couldn't hold forever. For an instant, the chamber was full of fire. They screamed for mercy. They, Agrippa and Blackwood, were innocent. Would I just murder them? Would I just murder anyone, even Magnus, even by accident? No. I forced my thoughts to calm. The fire died. Agrippa huddled in a heap, while Magnus and Blackwood pointed their staves at me with real fear in their eyes.
Stay back, Howl,
Magnus said. He winced, his grip on his stave loosening. Good Lord, I'd ruined his hands. What if he couldn't be commended now? What had I done?
I'm sorry,
I whispered, crawling to my feet.
Master Agrippa, I'm so sorry.
His look undid me. He found the sight of me repulsive. I turned and ran, and didn't stop until I was out of the house. I knocked 7 times at Hardgrove's door before I forced my way inside.
Please, you need to help me,
I gasped as I entered the room.
I've done something terrible.
My voice echoed in the bare space. The place was abandoned. The table and chairs, the curtain, the mattress before the stove, Hargrove's treasure chest, all had vanished as if into thin air. Hargrove and the children were gone, set sail for America, most likely. I knelt in the now empty room and wept. Agrippa's stables were full of the pungent scent of manure and the sweetness of grain. When I was certain no one else was about, I walked over to the stalls. The horses nuzzled me, searching for a treat. "What am I going to do?" I said. "Perhaps I could transform myself into a horse and stay here." But I wasn't that kind of magician, and of course animals had problems of their own.
"Howl?"
"Damn." Magnus ran toward me. His hands were bandaged.
"Where on earth did you go?"
"I don't think that's any of your business."
"For God's sake, I'm sorry. I'd had too much to drink. I didn't mean to insult you."
"So you're not responsible for your actions?"
"That's not what I'm saying," he snapped. "I'm trying to apologize. It shouldn't have happened."
"But it did, and you can't change it." I hoped he would disappear.
He didn't. "You might apologize for trying to murder me," he said.
"I'm sorry for trying to murder you. Happy?" I aggressively petted a horse.
"What I said about wishing I didn't have to marry Miss Winslow was true."
He moved close enough that I could feel his breath on the back of my hair. I half hoped, even now, that he'd put his arms around my waist. I hated that.
"Really, if I didn't have this infernal engagement..."
"You think so much of yourself, don't you?" I turned to face him. "Suppose I had no great desire to marry you. Suppose I found you handsome and charming and wanted to kiss you, but nothing else. Can you imagine a situation where a young woman wouldn't want to give herself to you, body and soul?" He flushed and leaned closer.
"Nice young women don't run around trying to get fellows to kiss them."
"I didn't try to get you to do anything."
"Don't play hurt with me, Henrietta. You enjoyed what happened last night, and if you're the type who likes to be kissed and nothing else, there are plenty of men."
Something clattered nearby, startling us. Rook appeared from around the corner, looking ashen. A wooden bucket lay fallen on the ground. Its water crept across the stones.
Magnus cleared his throat. "Rook, let me explain."
A wild light came into Rook's eyes. He threw the mop aside and struck Magnus across the face. The sorcerer staggered backward. Now the boys were locked together and grappling. Magnus with superior strength but damaged hands, and Rook with greater fury. Magnus fought Rook off and held him down.
"Magnus, let go! Rook, stop it!"
The harder they fought, the greater chance Rook's power would be unleashed.
"Stop it, I said!"
And then it happened. Darkness rushed from the stables in a wave, a shadowed mass that poured over them. Rook tore himself away from Magnus and rose out of the gloom, letting the other boys scream as he vanished from sight.
"Let him go!"
I begged. Rook ignored me, fascinated by his handiwork. I slapped his face in a desperate attempt to wake him. The direction of his anger shifted. Now I could feel darkness growing around me. A chilled sensation formed on my skin. With a cry, I lit my hand on fire and shoved it toward his face. There was a horrible moment when I thought I'd have to burn him, but it worked. The shadows lifted from me and from Magnus. Rook was himself again. No, not quite. His eyes had returned to their normal color, yet there was strangeness in the cool way he regarded the effects of his work. The sight of Magnus, huddled in terror, seemed to please him. Standing with his arms relaxed at his sides, he cocked his head to study the scene from different angles. I recalled the familiar girl, when I'd fought her at the edge of the ward. She tilted her head in a similar way.
"I don't remember any of it," he said, his tone distant. "I was so angry."
"I know," I said. Slowly, I approached the person who was not really Rook and touched his hand. He crumpled to the ground.
"Don't,"
he cried, his voice thick with anguish. He moaned, clasping his hands around the back of his neck. The whispering
wanted me to tear you apart where you stood. If you hadn't frightened it off with that fire, what's happening to me? The Shadow's Chosen. That's what the familiar had called him on the road at Brimthorn.
I don't know, I murmured. He should never have come to London, I thought. And then, I made him come here.
During all this, Magnus had come out of his defensive crouch on the ground. His hair was wild with bits of straw. I'd never seen him so pale.
What was that? He said.
Then, pointing to Rook,
what in God's name are you?
There was no hiding it now. Footsteps echoed over the paving stones. The footmen grabbed Rook and forced him to his feet. He didn't protest. If anything, he seemed relieved.
Stop!
I cried. Magnus held me back.
Don't make this worse, he whispered.
All I could do was stand helpless as Agrippa and Blackwood rushed into the yard.
What on earth is going on?
Agrippa shouted.
We heard screams, sir, the footman said. We came out to find the young master on the ground.
The others hadn't seen Rook's power, but Magnus knew. One word from him and Rook would be in the worst kind of trouble.
Magnus, how many people are going to try killing you before this day is out?
Blackwood snapped.
Why, Rook?
Agrippa turned to my friend, now held between two footmen.
Why would you do such a thing?
Rook shook his head.
I cannot tell you, sir.
You had better tell me, or you'll be out of my household this minute.
No! I pressed forward. It's all Magnus's fault!
Everyone turned to me.
How is that?
Agrippa said. There was no good way out of this, even leaving aside Rook's shadowed attack. By confessing the reason for his violence, I would forever damage my reputation. But Rook mattered more.
Rook overheard Magnus and me talking.
Joking, really? On my part, at least,
Magnus said, cutting in with ease.
That'll teach me, I suppose. Julian, what on earth is going on?
Agrippa said. I held my breath. Magnus swept back his hair, his confident smile returning.
I was teasing Hal last night about, oh, something or other. She got cross, so I followed her out here, teasing her more. Rook overheard me say...
Here he paused and laughed, as if he couldn't himself believe it.
That I wished I hadn't kissed her. You did what?
Agrippa said, shocked. I bit the inside of my cheek.
No, I didn't actually do it, of course. How could I kiss anything so cold? My lips would get stuck to her. It was a tasteless joke, but poor Rook seemed to think I was being serious. He defended Hal's honour.
He laughed like it was the world's greatest gag. Truly, he'd make a fine actor.
Please don't punish Rook for being gallant. He struck a blow for decent women everywhere.
I realized Magnus wasn't going to mention Rook's powers and could hardly believe it.
You teased her. That would explain...
Agrippa looked to me, undoubtedly remembering what had happened this morning.
You must be more careful with what you say, Julian. One day, there could be dire consequences. I see that now, sir. Very well. Rook, you'll be locked in your room until after the ball.
What? Why?
I cried.
Do not question me, Henrietta.
Rook let the men drag him away. He didn't look as if he could stand on his own. As the crowd headed indoors, Blackwood grabbed Magnus and pulled him beside the stables. I slipped away from the others, waited along the wall, and listened to their conversation. Really, I was getting far too good at eavesdropping.
You bastard, Blackwood said, his voice pure venom. Nothing happened. What's this other girl's name? Doris Winslow, Magnus said, surprised. When the devil did you find out about her? Just now. but I'd have to have been an idiot not to guess what happened when you came down to breakfast. You couldn't look at each other, and you were always so comfortable before.
He said comfortable like it was a contagious disease. I presumed there might be another young woman. You are the lowest kind of filth.
I never, ever thought it would go so far.
Magnus sounded disgusted, but I didn't think with me.
The champagne loosened me up.
It's not an excuse.
I should never have sent her home with you. It was like having a wolf nanny a lamb. Howl is surprisingly capable of looking after herself. You could have ruined her life.
It won't happen again, Magnus said softly.
And nearly getting that boy sacked. I saved the day there, thank you so much. He'll be fine.
Understand this, Magnus. She is worth 10 of you, in every respect. And I will destroy you if you harm her again.
That surprised me.
You've certainly changed your opinion. It's a waste of time, Blackie. She's no interest in you. She told me so.
I winced with embarrassment.
Besides, it would be the talk of the town. The great Earl of Sorrowfell taking up with some low-blooded girl.
Low-blooded was your own term, remember? Not mine.
Magnus's voice was warm with anger. Don't remind me of that, Blackwood snapped. I'm not in love with her, but I can see her value.
Always about value with you, isn't it? Why don't you grow a personality?
You're like a shambling ghost, curdling everyone's blood whenever you walk into a room. At least I don't spend my time seducing innocent young women. Someone's been reading novels again. What's the title of this one? The Poxy Lordling and the Aggressive Milkmaid?
Magnus sighed.
I tried to leave her alone, but I can't help myself. She teases me in just the right way.
Blackwood made a disgusted noise.
I don't care. Unless you want an enemy, Magnus, leave her alone. Like you did when she attended that school of yours.
The wall trembled, as if someone had been thrown against it. There was a flash of fire. An instant later, Blackwood raced past me, slapping at the smoking sleeve of his coat.
Handing down orders like you were God Almighty,
Magnus called, rubbing the back of his head while he came around the corner.
No wonder nobody likes you, Blackwood. I'm not here to be liked,
Blackwood snapped, heading into the house.
I'm here to do what's needed.
Magnus stood for a moment, watching him go.
I know you're there, Howl. Blast! I shrank even further into the dark. You needn't worry. I won't tell anyone what happened. I really think they'd kill Rook if they ever found out.
He sounded frightened.
But for all our sakes, I hope you know what you're doing.
With that, he followed Blackwood into the house. The butler met me in the hall, instructing me to see Agrippa immediately. Entering the library, I found him in the worst possible mood. His face was bright red with anger, and the veins on his neck bulged as he shouted at me.
How dare you attack a fellow sorcerer? How dare you leave my house under such circumstances without asking my permission?
His rage almost sent me to the floor.
You ungrateful girl! If anyone knew half of what had occurred, they'd have you out of London by tonight.
I'm sorry,
I said, my eyes cast down.
You attacked me. Me, of all people. I brought you into my house. I fed you, looked after you as if you were my own. I treated you like you were my...
He paused, as if to swallow the unspoken word.
I have never, in my life, seen such selfish, wretched behavior.
I'm so sorry, I whispered. I didn't mean to.
Now you will go upstairs and stay in your room until I've decided what's to be done. Do you hear me? Set one foot outside before I return, and there'll be the devil to pay.
It was an accident. My throat tightened. My emotions got the better of me.
Get upstairs, now!
Agrippa threw open the door, and I ran. The boys called to me, but I wouldn't answer. Once inside my room, I sat on the bed and stared at the fire. Agrippa hadn't given porridge back after I'd dropped it in the obsidian room. When Cellini had attacked me, they'd taken his stave. The pain of losing porridge, the mere idea of it, threatened to crush me. This would be the end, for Rook and for me.
Rook. I'd destroyed his hope of relief from the power that plagued him.
I'd ruined his chance of security. Heavy with misery, I fell across the bed, closed my eyes, and slept. Relum held out his hand.
It's been some time, he said.
I'd neglected Fenswick's herbs on purpose. I had wanted this meeting. The mist grew so thick, I couldn't see the room.
You can't have a great deal to do,
I muttered, heading to my window, popping into my head every so often.
I can do many things at once. Why do you want me here?
I pressed my forehead to the glass.
I don't know.
Relum ushered me aside and gently unlatched the window. Outside, the streets of London had disappeared. My bedroom perched on the edge of a cliff. The fall stretched before me, seemingly endless. This terrain was unfamiliar, a desert of pink and red rock, the earth barren and cracked. A crimson sun broiled above me. Great black creatures with leathery wings cavorted through the sky.
I want to go home.
I rubbed my eyes. This had been a mistake.
There is no home for you, is there? I cannot read your mind, but I can guess your thoughts. You live at the mercy of other people.
His voice was soothing and gentle, at complete odds with his appearance. I gazed out the window. In the valley below, the other ancients walked. Molochoron rolled, of course, a pulsing mass of mouldy grey. Antes, with that grotesque old woman's head upon a black vulture's body, soared through the fever-orange sky. There was Kallax. He was so large and bulky with muscle that it didn't surprise me when he crushed a thick ledge of rock with the effort one might use on an eggshell. Zem slithered by with his long, sleek lizard's body. A giant frill fanned out about his head, and he breathed a stream of fire and noxious vapor. Nemneris, the green and purple water spider, climbed the side of the cliff to fashion a giant, hideous web. And there was Korazoth, the old shadow and fog.
Poor child.
Relum didn't sound like a hideous beast.
You need someone to look after you.
I realized why I'd wanted him to come. My time at Agrippa's house was over. Hargrove had gone to America. Who would help me now? Relum offered his hand again. I finally understood what made ordinary humans flock to him, transform themselves into familiars. There was safety in service and obedience. And Relum was a charismatic leader. No, my problems were my own. However hard the road ahead, I would walk it.
Goodbye,
I whispered, and tipped forward out the window, off the cliff. Thank God for the knocking at my door. Bleary-eyed, I stared out the window and found it pitch black. The knock came again. Agrippa stood at the threshold, still wearing his cloak and hat.
"I've thought a few things through,"
he said. My stomach lurched. Slowly, he brought his hand out from behind his back, holding my stave.
"All's well, my dear. If you apologize to Magnus, I see no reason to drag this out."
His eyes glistened with tears. He seemed as relieved as I. I threw my arms around him, not caring how improper it might be. He clasped me back as I sobbed into his shoulder.
"I'm so sorry,"
I cried. He petted my hair.
"It was an accident. Accidents can be forgiven."
Relam was right. I did live at the mercy of others. But come tomorrow night, I'd have a true home in the Sorcerer's Fellowship. There was a path before me, and I would follow it.
Chapter 23 Agrippa and I sat before the fire while I ate supper. It was only a little cold mutton, but it tasted heavenly. He watched the flames, distant.
"Are you all right, sir?"
I asked. He smiled.
"Just distracted. Imagine, this time tomorrow night, you'll be a commended sorcerer."
"I hope so."
I gripped my teacup, savoring the warmth.
"It's impossible to be otherwise."
He looked into the flames again.
"I would have had this talk with her, you know."
He sighed.
"My Gwen."
"You must have been proud."
"More than words can say. She was my only child. There should have been brothers and sisters for her, but when her mother died, I couldn't bring myself to marry again. Everyone thought I yearned for a son. But Gwen was enough for me."
He shook his head.
"They told me I shouldn't train her. They even told me to give her a stave, then take it back immediately and bind it to leave her powerless."
What a monstrous idea.
"When I saw she could be a sorcerer," Agrippa said, "I couldn't have been more pleased. And then that awful, terrible disease."
He closed his eyes.
"I'm so sorry."
"Sometimes I go over and over that night. Was there anything I could have done differently?"
"You can't alter the course of a fever, Master Agrippa." I stood, a bit awkward, and placed my hand on his shoulder. He gripped my fingers.
"Thank you, Henrietta. You've been such a comfort. It's wonderful to have a young woman in the house again."
"I never met my father, but I know that you've shown me as much kindness and care as he ever could have," I said.
Agrippa began to sob. His whole body shook as he leaned against an armrest, burying his face in his hands.
"I'm so sorry. Did I say something wrong? Oh, what was I thinking? I didn't mean to say I feel I'm your daughter. It was awkward and stupid of me. Was there no end to my idiocy today?"
"Not at all, my dear."
He wiped his eyes with a handkerchief and kissed my hand.
"It will be so hard to let you go."
"Let me go?"
My heart swelled. Was his concern that I would leave him once I had been commended? I wanted to tell him that I'd stay if he needed me. But before the words could pass my lips, he said,
"Henrietta, perhaps you should go to bed. Rest for tomorrow. You'll need it."
"Of course. Good night, sir."
I left him and moved up the stairs, feeling lighter than ever. What a difference a few hours make. Agrippa didn't want me to leave.
I'd approach the subject after the commendation, but already I imagined him embracing me in joy. And Rook, if the situation became more permanent, perhaps his status would change. Perhaps we could discuss his shadow powers with Agrippa. I kept calm, reminding myself that nothing was certain. But if I made it through tomorrow, all might be well. I dreamed of Gwendolyn Agrippa lying in bed, her pale yellow hair arranged around her on the pillow. She looked peaceful and beautiful, even in death. I was dressed in ragged boy's clothes, my hands and face dirty as a beggar's. I went to take a ring off her finger and put it on my own, but the mattress erupted in a fountain of blood. I woke to a sharp knocking. Waiting for my heart to slow, I crept to the door and whispered, "Who is it?"
"Me,"
Blackwood said. I put on my wrap and opened the door a crack. His appearance shocked me. His black hair was wild and unruly. His shirt was undone at the throat, his white cravat rumpled under his chin. With his eyes rimmed in red, he looked as if he'd been drinking.
"I need to speak with you. The library?"
When I found him before the fire, he frightened me. Usually so composed and elegant, he clung to the marble ledge and leaned his head against it, his eyes closed tight. He muttered something to himself. All I could make out were the words "lost" and "time." "What on earth is the matter?"
"Please, sit down."
He ushered me into an armchair, then turned, a dark silhouette against the flames.
"What I'm about to tell you, I've never told another living soul. Not even my mother or sister knows this secret."
I waited, hands clasped in my lap.
"Before my father died, he told me something that he begged me never to repeat to anyone else."
"What on earth are you talking about?"
"My father had an open mind," Blackwood said, rubbing his chin. "He believed in making England stronger through harnessing forces beyond our natural understanding."
"Like magicians?"
"Yes. Magicians." "Listen," Blackwood said, kneeling before me. "Do you know why I pay Jenkins Hargrove?"
"Out of charity."
"No. Not really. It's part charity, part debt, I should say."
"I don't understand."
"I pay him because his real name isn't Jenkins Hargrove. It's Howard Michaelmas."
I almost jumped out of my seat. Howard Michaelmas, the evil magician who had worked with Mary Willoughby to bring our world to an end. That was the man who had trained me. If anyone ever knew, I'd die. I couldn't reconcile the untidy, rather drunk fellow I knew with the insane monster he was supposed to be.
No,
they couldn't be the same person. "How do you know he's Howard Michaelmas?" I gasped.
"Because my father told me who he was, and to pay him."
"Why would he have done that?"
"Mary Willoughby and Howard Michaelmas brought ruin down on this country, yes, and they tore open the breach that allowed the monsters to cross over. But they needed a third to complete the trinity of power, and that third," he said, his face twisting in pain, "was my father. And no one," he snapped, noting my look of horror, "outside myself and those concerned, has known about this. Not until tonight. Not until you."
He moved away from me to the fire.
"My father, once the ancients had been unleashed, knew what word of it would do to the Blackwood family. He fixed it so that it would appear Willoughby and Michaelmas were to blame, not he."
My mind raced, but settled on one detail. You said no one knows but yourself and those concerned. Who else?
Michaelmas, obviously.